This is New Testament Character Podcast 53 on the four evangelists. That is, the four gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, who are normally called evangelists because they wrote the good news. We'll be looking at their lives as much as we can in the order in which their gospels were written. The order doesn't matter terribly, but the majority of New Testament scholars would put Mark's gospel first, and then Matthew, Luke, and finally John. And that's what we'll do. Let's begin with Mark, who's also called John Mark. John is a common name in the Jewish world, Yohanan, very popular after the revolution in the 2nd century BC, the revolt that the Maccabees led. But Mark is a common name in the Roman world, and having a Greco-Roman name along with a Semitic name, that is having Mark along with John, that's not uncommon at all. And yet, it's difficult to prove that Mark is John Mark. Even if he's not, I think you can still derive some benefit from our study. Also, by way of introduction, some people identify Mark with the young man who fled Jesus' arrest with nothing. That is, his garment was ripped off and he ran away naked, Mark 14:52. Could be, but that's unsure. Mark is associated with Peter, according to an early 2nd century writer named Papias. And we'll return to that thought in a little bit. Well, when Peter was imprisoned for execution, and James had just been decapitated, James, the brother of John, and it will soon be Peter's turn, he's miraculously released in Acts 12, and he goes to John Mark's house. Well, the house of John Mark's mother. It's the family home. He knocks on the door. Rhoda, the servant, announces he's come. No one believes him. You're familiar with that story. And that story is set in the mid-40s. Acts 12:12. When Peter realized that it wasn't a dream, Peter realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John Mark, where many people had gathered together and were praying. So this is a prayer meeting. And if a good number of people were meeting in the house to pray, it suggests that John Mark's family were people of means. A poor person has little space. A well-off person would have more space. And this is where many house churches met in the early church. We read at the end of Acts 12, "So Barnabas and Saul returned to Jerusalem when they had completed their mission, bringing along with them John Mark." Or one translation says, John, whose other name was Mark. So we see that Mark is a missionary. He's also connected with Saul and Barnabas, especially with Barnabas. This is before Saul is going by the name Paul. That changes in Acts 13. We're still in Acts 12. Okay, let's fast forward just a few years. It's 49 AD. The council in Jerusalem has taken place. And afterwards, we find, starting in verse 36, "After some days, Paul said to Barnabas, 'Let's return and visit the brothers in every town where we proclaim the word of the Lord to see how they're doing.'" Okay, so there's follow-up. This is Acts 15, 36, 37 now. "Barnabas wanted to bring John called Mark along with them too, but Paul insisted that they should not take along this one who had left them in Pamphylia and had not accompanied them in the work. They had a sharp disagreement so that they parted company. Barnabas took along Mark and sailed away to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and set out, committed to the grace of the Lord by the brothers and the sisters, and he passed through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches." Okay, so this is a follow-up visit. Churches have been planted, and this was Paul's plan. He would try to visit them personally and follow up. He would write them letters. He would send representatives, you know, emissaries, and he wants to go back. And he says, "Barnabas, let's do it." Barnabas says, "Let's bring along Mark." And Paul's not happy with that. Okay, now, again, this is the late 40s. It's a few years later than what we read in Acts 12. And Paul feels that John Mark should not join them. Why? Was it too much pressure for the young man? Was he untested or in some way fragile? Or had he not shown himself to be reliable? Or was it simply they had a disagreement on strategy and Mark didn't want to come along? Maybe he wanted to evangelize a different group. Maybe there just wasn't a good chemistry between the two, between Paul or Saul and John Mark. We don't know exactly, but we know that there was a sharp disagreement between Paul and Barnabas. Some people, I've heard some teachers say, look, Paul was in the wrong here. He's not gracious. He's clearly in the wrong. Well, if that's true, it's odd that we read in verse 40, Paul chose Silas instead of Mark, instead of Barnabas, actually. Paul chose Silas and set out, committed to the grace of the Lord by the brothers and sisters. So the group there seems to think Paul's right. Well, is either right, Paul or Barnabas, or is it not possible to learn? I'm not focusing on that in this talk. We're really focusing on Mark himself. Barnabas chooses to remain with Mark. Now, why, we'll learn in a moment. I think this must have been very hard for Barnabas because he had believed in Saul when no one else did. Remember Acts 9, taking him to meet the Jerusalem leaders, to meet the other apostles, and the church is afraid of him. People are doubting his motives. It must have been very hard. Barnabas stuck up for Saul in a very difficult moment. And I can imagine that this incident must be difficult for Mark as well. Cyprus, by the way, is Barnabas's ancestral home. If you're not familiar with New Testament geography, it's always good to open up to the map at the back of your Bible or online, wherever. Look at the Mediterranean, and you'll see exactly where the island of Cyprus is. Pretty much the same place it is today. But look at Cyprus. It's really not that far from where everyone was working. It's the Eastern Mediterranean. And the Jews had been scattered all over the broader Mediterranean area. So Jews, like the family of Barnabas, had homes, properties, friends, at least a web of relationships all over the Roman Empire. Now, we're jumping ahead more than 10 years. It's approximately 60 AD, the next time that we come across Mark. This is the end of Colossians. Colossians 4:10. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, sends you greetings, as does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, about whom you received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him. Okay, now we see Mark is Barnabas's cousin. That explains, in part, why the feelings ran high. You know, blood can be thicker than water. It explains why they wanted to be together and went to Cyprus, because Barnabas and Mark both had family there. Now, we also see that since Paul's writing this letter, he is in some sense reconnected with Mark, because he says, Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, sends you greetings, as does Mark. I don't think it's saying that Mark's in prison, though it could mean that, but it could mean that they're having regular contact at the very least. Yeah, so this is more than 10 years after the last passage we saw in Acts. And you know, people change in 10 years. I change in 10 years. We change, not just the way we look or feel, though that happens as we age, but perspectives change. And some things become more important to us, more serious. Other things become less of a big deal, but people change. Now, in Philemon, the little letter of Philemon, near the very end, very short sentence, Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, my co-laborers, greet you too. So Mark is numbered among Paul's colleagues, people like Aristarchus and Luke. And Mark sends greetings. Paul and Mark are sending greetings to people living in the Lycus Valley. Lycus Valley is where you have Hierapolis and Colossae. So he knew people around the world. And not just people in Cyprus, Mark's ancestral home, or around Israel, but quite likely Egypt and Syria, where he had been. So that's from Philemon, which is written the same time as Colossians. And there's one more passage, and that's in 2 Timothy. So now we're going forward a few more years. 2 Timothy 4, 9-11. Make every effort to come to me soon, for Demas has deserted me, since he loved the present age, and he went to Thessalonica. Crescens has went to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, because he's a great help to me in ministry. Well, 2 Timothy seems to be written during Paul's imprisonment, which ultimately led to execution under the Emperor Nero. And that persecution began in the summer of 64. Nero died in 68. So 2 Timothy, which is probably the last of Paul's letters, the next to last would be Titus, the second to last would be 1 Timothy, but it would be Paul's final letter. And not only have Saul, or Paul, and John Mark reconnected, now the apostle appears to be very fond of him. Okay, so 2 Timothy is dated by conservative scholars to the mid-60s or late 60s, and most scholars date the composition of Mark, conservative and liberal, to around the year 65. So it occurred to me as I was preparing this, it's just possible that Paul had heard about Mark's gospel or had even read it. Of course, I am speculating, who knows? But it's a very encouraging comparison. The words of Paul in 2 Timothy 4:9 compared to the incident, the friction, the strong disagreement nearly 20 years earlier. I've got some further thoughts for you on Mark. Although Mark is anonymous, like all four Gospels, there is an early and strong tradition that Mark was the author of what we call Mark. And Papias is the second century figure who tells us about the composition of Mark and tells us that Mark accompanied Peter. So in a sense, Mark gives us the gospel, let's say from Peter's perspective. It's not the gospel of Peter, that's a late second century apocryphal document. It's not part of the Bible, never was. But Mark's gospel is somehow tied in with Peter. And Peter felt comfortable, apparently, with Mark recording all his weaknesses, which is a great insight into Peter's character. He's not always shown to be a paragon of stability. Peter is shown as he really is, and apparently Mark is comfortable recording these things. I think that's a testimony to the humility of Peter and the other leaders of the early church. And then I would be remiss if I didn't also mention the tradition that Mark was a leading figure in Egypt. Alexandria was the second city of the empire. You know, after Rome, you have Alexandria, then you've got Syria and Antioch, and probably Ephesus would be number four. And amazingly, even though it's the second city, no missionary work is referred to. Now, it's unthinkable, to me anyway, that the apostles would have skipped Egypt, that they would have ignored Alexandria. But the book of Acts is highly selective, really focusing on Peter and Paul. And even then, it's selective. Though it's not at all unreasonable to think that someone prominent would have gone to Alexandria and started Christianity there. The best candidate for that is Mark. And this would be fairly early on. They claim he was there in the mid-first century. Why do I say he's the best candidate? Well, not just because the Egyptians today insist so loudly he's the founder of Egyptian Christianity, but also because, as far as I know, there are no further claimants to the title. It fits, it makes sense, and we're not choosing between Mark and someone else. He was a great man, and his name is still highly popular, but that combination name, John Mark, I don't know how common that is, although I do know one person whose given name is John Mark. The combination of writing and missionary experience, that is, he writes the gospel, but he has this missionary experience of 20 years plus, yeah, I mean, that's what's recorded in the Bible, shows that he's no armchair academic. And you know, the same can be said of Matthew, one of the 12, Luke, who traveled with Paul, John, another apostle. These persons, yes, they wrote and communicated, they were literate, but they were out there doing the work. And that's always the best way. Okay, let's talk about Matthew. Matthew, whose other name is Levi or Levi, he's actually covered in another talk, another New Testament character podcast. So I'm going to be brief here. He's mentioned in Matthew 9:9, although the gospel that bears his name is anonymous, as all the gospels are. So we find him in Matthew 9:9 and also 10:3, and he's from Capernaum. He's from the place that will become Jesus' second home. He's also called Levi, so many ways to say it, son of Alphaeus. And we find that in Mark 2:14 and Luke 5:27. Matthew collected taxes for Herod Antipas, the Tetrarch of Galilee. He may have been despised as a collaborator with Rome, but his willingness to follow Christ shows his heart was good. And as a tax collector, Matthew would have been literate in Aramaic and Greek, in addition to being good with numbers. But in truth, we know more about Zacchaeus, Luke 19, another tax collector in the first century, than we know anything about Matthew. Zacchaeus is the one. Tell me about your favorite tax collector. Everyone loves this Zacchaeus story. According to early tradition, Matthew died in Parthia, where he also had been ministering. So this is, think Persia, think Iran, think the Caspian Sea, you'll get the idea. His gospel was the most quoted among the early church fathers. The most quoted, the most popular, I suppose. Just as people today are still naming their baby boys after Matthew. And that's happening worldwide. And if you want more on this, check out Q&A 1551, which is Whatever Happened to the Apostles After New Testament Times. You'll find even more information about him. We move now to Luke. So Mark's gospel is first, then Matthew's. Most scholars put Matthew in the 70s, although it could have been the 60s. And then you've got Luke, who's usually put a little bit after Matthew. As to his identity, a doctor, a Gentile, the only Gentile writer of the New Testament, and he wrote one quarter of the New Testament. If you doubt me, count in your New Testament, count how many pages are taken up by Luke and Acts, that is volume 1 and volume 2 of Luke's work, and divide into the total number of pages. He wrote a quarter of the New Testament, and we know that he accompanied Paul. And you can tell in the book of Acts, well, you can tell in the letters because Paul mentions him, clearly they're in contact, seeing each other. But in the Gospels, in the Acts, sometimes the narrative says they went here or there, and other times it says we went there or here. And if you map out the we passages, as they're called, compared to the they passages, you can find exactly when Luke was with Paul's entourage. It's not rocket science, and it's helpful. Luke is mentioned several times in the New Testament, all three times, in fact, in Paul's epistles that were penned in the 60s AD. So they're all together. Colossians 4:14. Our dear friend Luke the physician and Demas greet you. Well, that's the sole verse where we learn that Luke is a doctor. Now, not a doctor like many of the quacks of the ancient world. The Romans wrote about street hawkers, people who would probably kill you, where the cure would always be worse than the sickness. Because if Luke lacked ability or credentials, it's very doubtful that attention would have been drawn to his shabby so-called skills. I think we take the text as we find it and give him the benefit of the doubt. And his polished Greek attests to a high level of education. The Greek of Luke Acts is much nicer than the Greek of John or Matthew or Mark. No, he's got that level of education. This is not a disadvantaged person running cons on people, as many doctors did. This is someone who had means and status. Then we go to Philemon near the very end. Greetings are being sent, as is normal with Paul's letters. It says, Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, greets you. So Epaphras is greeting Philemon and their house church. And then verse 24, Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, my co-laborers, greet you. May the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ be with your spirit. So again, like Mark, Luke is mentioned among Paul's colleagues. And then a sad sentence in 2 Timothy 4:11, Only Luke is with me. And that's when Paul is very close to his execution. Let me share a few thoughts about Luke before we go on. The message of Christ attracted not only the disenfranchised and the educated, but also professionals and even the well-off. Now, I'm not saying that the early church consisted primarily of well-to-do people, but it's neither true that it was only slaves and women and old people. For example, Paul says to the Corinthians, "Consider your calling, brothers and sisters. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise." Okay. So that's 1 Corinthians 1:26, 27. He doesn't say no one was noble or powerful or wise. Christianity has always attracted highly educated people. It's always attracted some people from the upper classes, even the nobility. But the message of Christ is for everybody. There's a parallel in the lives of the two most influential apostles. Just as Mark accompanied Peter, Luke accompanied Paul. So Mark's gospel reflects Peter's life and character to some extent, and Luke's two volumes provide us with an abundance of information about Paul, facts to which we would not otherwise have any access at all. And like Matthew, Mark, and John, Luke's name is highly popular. Matthew, from Hebrew. Mark is a Gentile name, but John is Hebrew, as in John Mark. Luke is a Gentile name from the Latin Lucius, or in the Middle Ages, Lucius. So these are very popular names. If you're having a child, you're not sure what to name a boy, just pick one of the apostles. There's still a stigma over Judas, but you could always call him Jude because that's also a man's name. Well, finally, we come to John, whom we have covered completely in another talk, another New Testament character podcast. So there's no need to repeat the material, only to say that John ministered in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, in Ephesus, in Patmos, and probably he's buried in Ephesus. His tomb is there, and you can visit it on a tour, perhaps. And for more on John, just listen to the New Testament character podcast on John. That requires login, but not if you listen to the podcast on John. Sign up wherever you get your podcasts. And again, in the article, Whatever Happened to the Apostles After New Testament Times, you can find lots more material. Well, even though the four gospel writers' names cannot be established with certainty, since copies of the documents that we have are all anonymous, the identifications have strong early corroboration. And I hope that you've learned something interesting or something inspiring through this brief study.